Welcome to the Tim DeMoss Show podcast. You can hear the program each weekday afternoon from 4 till 5 on AM 560 WFIL and WFIL.com.
AM 560, WFIL.com, and on the app, listening to the Tim DeMoss Show. Thank you for tuning in. Beautiful day, good deal of sun. 69 for the high, some clouds, maybe a shower tonight and or overnight. 51 the low. Tomorrow's high up to 70 after morning clouds. Should be breezy and some sun by tomorrow afternoon. Slowly making our way out of the chilly weather and getting into the 60s and 70s. I think we're supposed to hit 80 before long in the next week or so. Looking forward to that. Certainly, the Phillies appreciate that. Baseball weather. They won 7-0 against Cincinnati last night on the road. Ranger Suarez, another strong performance. He's had a great year so far. 7 innings pitched, just a couple of hits allowed. Walked one, struck out 5. He is, what, I guess he's 4-0 on the year now, and he leads the league in something called WHIP, which I guess is walks and hits added together divided by innings pitched. So he's basically dominating the other teams. Phillies manager Rob Thompson talked about that, about especially his last few games. He hasn't given up any runs.
I think tonight was more of his, on his pitchability, whereas the last couple of starts he's had a little bit more power and a little bit more confidence probably in his fastball because, you know, he was a little bit fresher. Tonight, after a complete game, I'm always worried about our pitchers after a complete game because it's just taxing in lineups. I was actually thinking about taking him out after the 6th, but he had so few pitches, it was just, it'd be ridiculous, you know. So I sent him back out, and he got through it. What was he, 88 pitches? And I said, we're going to go 80 pitch max, but we got him to 88 because it was just very free and easy.
Phillies manager Rob Thompson on Ranger Suarez. Again, he's 4-0 on the year, and the Phillies are putting some wins together. They'll try it again tonight at Cincinnati at 6:40. Christopher Sanchez on the mound. Part of the success also in last night's win with the bat, Cody Clemens, who hit his first home run on the year, knocked in 3. He was called up from AAA because Bryce Harper, their star slugger on the paternity list, as he and his wife are expecting their third child. They have a son, Crew, who's 4 and a half years old, and their daughter, Brooklyn, is 3+. And so they're welcoming another child into the family. I always kidded around, the Lord blessed us with 5 after you get to 2, and then you have your third. We used to call it, like, we're on a zone defense now. People will talk to you as parents, like, is it more work when you go from 1 to 2 or 2 to 3? And everybody's got their opinion on that. I can't remember how we felt, but after a while, it's just, you know, a fun way of putting it as well. It can't be one parent, you take that one, and I'll take this one. Once you get more than 2, then you have to obviously, just kind of deal with the group at large at times. So in any case, the Harpers are looking for child number 3 any day now. The Sixers are looking for victory number 1. They lost last night, 104-101 against the Knicks. Tough game. The Knicks are ahead 2-0 in their playoff series. Tyrese Maxey, 35 points, 10 assists. Joel Embiid, 34 points and 10 rebounds, but not quite enough. Sixers head coach Nick Nurse on the team being down 2-0.
Well, it's a long series yet. We're going to look at how we can play better, and we're going to get back home and play better.
Nice and short and to the point. Phillies sound back there, by the way, courtesy of NBC Sports Phillies YouTube page and the Sixers from the NBA content site there as far as Nick Nurse. What else going on? Let's see. Not to be forgotten, because the hockey playoffs are continuing. Flyers just missed that. Their exit interviews that the players did recently, Sean Couturier, their captain, talked about the fact that although they missed the playoffs by a little bit, still a positive year overall.
It's fun to see our team grow, and if you look at the process, the rebuild, you know, we're building something special, I think. But now, you know, that being said, yeah, we had a good year and all that, and we beat some expectations, but you got to do it all over again next year, and it's not going to be easy, but I think if we keep growing and keep believing in our team, we can reach that next level, and that's obviously exciting.
It's Flyers captain Sean Couturier, their leading scorer, Travis Konecny, who led the team in goals with 33, with assists 35, and points with 68. Also, similarly, they talked about the team, the Flyers, proving people wrong a bit.
I think it was awesome for a lot of the guys to just prove a lot of people wrong and maybe even prove themselves wrong, like show themselves that we're fighting with every other team, every other top team in the league, and now it's just believing and we prove it to ourselves. So you can go into the summer now working hard and have that, you know, eagerness and hungry attitude to get back at it and, you know, be right back to this spot as quickly as we can next year. We see where we're at again.
It's Travis Konecny of the Flyers, courtesy of the Flyers and NHL.com. And not to be forgotten, of course, football. The Eagles are getting ready for the draft on Thursday night. They have a first round pick and I think a couple of seconds. They have 8 picks overall. April and the entire offseason have actually been very busy for the Eagles, including a couple of extensions for a number of key players. Devontae Smith, their wide receiver, who they took in the first round a few years ago and who has done a great job his first few seasons, talked about why he signed an extension to stay in Philadelphia.
I mean, this is what God wanted. You know, it was presented before me, and I thought about it, prayed on it, and, you know, that's what God put on my heart, so I followed along with it.
That's Devontae Smith, wide receiver for the Eagles, who also talked a bit more about playing in Philadelphia specifically.
I understand, you know, expectations are high in the city. You know, the fans, they expect a lot of you. When you're not playing up to it, they let you know. And me, being the person I am, I'm nobody's harder on me than myself. So, you know, nothing that fans say or things like that can actually get to me. I mean, I embrace it. I embrace it because it just shows that, you know, the fans love it. They live and breathe Philly. I mean, not only us, but basketball, baseball, everything. I mean, they love it. And you want to be in a city like that. And I always say, I don't think there's a better sports city than Philadelphia.
Eagles wide receiver Devontae Smith in his first 3 years, 240 catches, almost 3,200 yards and 19 touchdowns. So it's a strong, and he's only, he started all but one game. So durable, despite, you know, he's a thin, frail looking guy in a way, but he's very strong, very courageous. I don't know. I marvel sometimes at how those players do what they do, knowing they're about to get clobbered. That's another topic for another time. But Devontae Smith, one of the other players who signed an extension and recently was chatting with the media, Jordan Mailata, their offensive tackle from Australia, and he had some interesting comments about what it's like to be a player from another country and also what that means, like his extension and in general the advancement of players who do come in from other countries to play.
I think it's a huge opportunity. One, for those players and those athletes coming through the program to, you know, show the world and show in America that they got what it takes to play in the league. Two, I think it's a great opportunity for the NFL to build its brand internationally because I've grown to love the sport that I'm in. And, you know, I think it would be a shame if we didn't capitalize on the other countries and talents, other countries that provide these talents that I know that are out there. So I think it's a great opportunity. How do I feel about it? I mean, I'm honored to be one of many who have made the step in this game to leave their home countries and try and make a career out of this, you know, both on the coaching staff side and player side. So there are many people who are international players and coaches. So I'm honored to be one of them and to at least pave a way for the young guns coming through. So
that's Eagles left tackle Jordan Mailata. He's extended through 2028, as is Devontae Smith, whose audio we played that back there as well. PhiladelphiaEagles.com credit for both of those. So yeah, a lot going on in the world of sports, a lot going on the program today as well. Among them, a couple of special guests, Paul Pringle, who is a journalist with the investigative journalist with Los Angeles Times, is going to be joining our program to talk about a podcast that he has, a 10-episode podcast called Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption. And it's hard to explain because there's lots of twists and turns to it, but we'll talk with him about it. And you can find out more. Just, you know, Google Paul Pringle, like the chip, online, and you can and look up the title. It's called Fallen Angels, A Story of California Corruption. Also, Zorro with one R, Z-O-R-O, will be joining us. He's a world-renowned drummer, often referred to as the Minister of Groove, and he has played with all kinds of artists, ranging from Lenny Kravitz to Earth, Wind, and Fire, The Four Seasons, New Edition, and a number of others. So we'll chat with him now, about music, a little bit of music, but also he has a memoir out called Maria's Scarf, a memoir of a mother's love, a son's perseverance, and dreaming big. He has a very interesting story, growing up in a single-parent home, and his mom had to move him, the family, the kids, all over many, many times. I think it's over 30 times by the time he was 9 or 10. And yet he has, despite all of that, what you, I guess, you could call a rather challenging growing up, moving so much, among other things, not having his father in his life. He's, become a world famous drummer, very, very gifted. But more than that, he wants to serve God with his talents. And so we'll chat with Zorro on the program today and whatever else we can get in the show. There's a lot to do. Looking forward to continuing the program here in just a moment. You're listening to The Tim DeMoss Show, AM 560, WFIL.com, and on the WFIL app.
It's The Tim DeMoss Show podcast, available at WFIL.com. Thanks for listening.
This is Jim Rockford at the tone. Leave your name and message. I'll get back to you.
Jim, it's Shirley at the cleaners. You know that brown jacket? The one I said looks so great on you? Your favorite? We lost it.
AM560, WFIL.com. On the app as well. Theme song from my favorite shows growing up as a kid, The Rockford Files. And I bring that on as we bring on Paul Pringle, LA Times investigative reporter. He specializes in investigating corruption. He won a Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting. In 2019, he was a finalist. He's also been on reporting teams that won Pulitzer Prizes. And he's won a bunch of other awards. He has a 10-part podcast out called Fallen Angels, A Story of California Corruption. I'll read you the description of the first one. The Hotel Constance, which actually opened in the 1920s, starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, ends with the undoing of some of the most powerful people in Los Angeles. It's about influence, money, and how they can eat away at people and make people look past things that they know are very, very wrong. Devin Kahn is the manager on duty as part of the story. And listening to it's the easiest way to get the gist of it, but there's a lot to it. And we're glad to bring on board at this time Paul Pringle. Hey, Paul, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking time today. Congratulations on the podcast. I'll just throw it to you right away, if we could, for a second. Share some backstory for putting Fallen Angels, A Story of California Corruption, together. What led you wanting to do a podcast version?
Well, it's based on my book, Bad City, Peril and Power in the City of Angels, which is about a series of scandals at the University of Southern California, but perhaps more importantly, also about the difficulty I and my colleagues had at the LA Times in getting the first story on those scandals published. And beyond that, it's about the personal stories of the people involved, people who were hurt by the scandals, who were brave enough to help us expose what was going on, and that sort of thing. So that led to the podcast.
In episode one, The Hotel Constance, you gets one of the central characters, Devon, I think is how you say the name, and Devon talked about meeting a photographer at the LA Times at a gathering. It's interesting to note that, I guess, without that meeting, maybe the story doesn't find its way to you. And in general, how there are those hinge points that maybe something never happens unless, right? So,
yes, that quite a bit. There were many twists and turns in this story that if things didn't go our way, the story would have never happened. Most of it was circumstance, happenstance. And Devon, yeah, he tried everything. He called 911 from the hotel. A colleague of his at the hotel called the police. Devon later contacted the city attorney's office when he learned there was no arrest made. He contacted the president's office at USC. They did nothing. And so he even tried to reach us initially, and our switchboard wanted him to leave a voice message. He didn't want to do that because everything he was doing could get him fired. So yeah. He had just about given up, bumped into Ricardo, my photographer colleague, at that party. And yeah, if that didn't happen, we wouldn't be talking.
It made me think of something in episode two, The Trojan Wall, where you talk about your editor, Matt, and his support. But it made me think in general, like, what if you don't have an editor that's supportive? And in general, obstacles you personally have and or what you need. It kind of made me think about, Devon, with regard to, well, how hard do you push, or do I just drop it? How have you found that in the work that you do, where you have obstacles and you have to know where to stop and where to say, no, there's a story that has to be told one way or another?
In this case, it was the latter. This story had to be told. And I was lucky to have a good editor, a great editor, Matt Late, at that time, who, after the first story, was killed by the top editor, which I get into on the podcast and of course, in the book.
Yeah.
That he could have said, well, you know, we tried, it didn't work, but he did not. Instead, he put together a team of reporters. He added four more people to the story to force the issue, as he put it. And he did this, we did this in secret from the top editors at the paper. You know, that took guts on all of their parts.
Yeah. You know, in Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, there's the fluidity strikes me. For example, you mentioned talking and speaking with Devon in April of 2016 and had no idea of the story that you were going to uncover, thinking it was going to be a quick hit piece on a drug overdose. So I'm just curious, in your work, how you handle the aspect of investigative journalism with regard to closure. Like, I think this is done versus I'm not so sure. And because you could end something way prematurely, or you could also just keep looking when there's nothing to find. How do you handle that, those boundaries personally?
You see the bigger story behind what you're looking at initially. That's when you know that you can't stop. In this case, initially, I thought there was a crime committed here. There's going to be a police report. I'm going to be able to get that and other information from the police. And this thing might be wrapped up in a couple of weeks. But instead, I encountered a stonewall, a cover-up. And that told me that there's something bigger going on. And in fact, the cover-up then becomes part of the story, if not the bigger story. And that does happen. And it certainly happened in this case. And the cover-up then extended to the university. And as I go into much greater detail on what happened in this scandal, other agencies did not do, in my view, what they should have done. The district attorney's office, the state attorney general's office. And again, getting back to my own newspaper, initially, at least until we got new editors. You know, we had all these problems getting the story published. And in fact, when the story finally was published, it was watered down at the last minute. The material most damaging to USC was deleted for no good reason. so yeah, the step back, there's a point where you realize there's something bigger here and you can't stop just because that initial story seems to be going nowhere.
Paul, you've won a lot of awards and been part of a lot of investigations. I was curious about the characteristics, even a couple main things you feel are really important to do your job well. The word tenacious comes to mind, but even then you have to be, I'm sure, wise about when to be real strong and lean into something versus be more, you know, I'll bide my time. But what are some things that you really have developed over the years to help you do your job well?
Well, I think what's key, and this gets into biding your time and patience, is earning the trust of people, like the people in this story that on the podcast. If your people are speaking to you at risk to themselves, they could lose their jobs. And I've been on stories where they could be physically harmed by speaking to me. And you kind of learn that. You learn it by doing. And it does take patience. It doesn't always work out. Some people are too frightened, and you understand that. So it often takes many conversations, many return trips to someone's doorstep. But that's probably the most important thing I've learned in doing these types of investigations.
Jim Rockford came to mind when I was listening in. I'm like, these elements of danger and perseverance, but also stepping aside and being going back to the scene, you know, or Columbo, you know, different people who, because I personally am not someone who likes to make people uncomfortable. And I'm guessing you also have to be willing to make people uncomfortable, right? I mean, you know, even though it might not be right?
Yes, you do. You do have to. And you don't try to make the good guys uncomfortable, of course.
Yeah.
But the targets of your investigation, there's going to be a lot of discomfort you're going to cause them. Yes, that's true. And you're going to get threats. I mean, in these, you know, we were threatened with lawsuits in reporting the story for the LA Times. I was threatened with lawsuits in writing the book. That comes with the territory. The threats led to nothing. They didn't change a single word in my reporting, either for the paper or for the book. Nothing was refuted through these threats. And that happens routinely now. And you just getting your way.
Well, and you know, Paul, I'm just saying that also thinking the title, Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, it's a California story, but applied elsewhere. I'm thinking part of the goal of this, maybe just to raise awareness in general about some of these things that are going on. Is there something that can be applied in other, you know, realms of life as folks listen in?
Absolutely. I mean, if it could happen here, it could happen anywhere. LA is supposed to be this progressive place. Transparency, sunshine, all that stuff. Well, I didn't encounter any of that here. And if so, I would suspect this goes on everywhere to some extent. Now, what happened in my newsroom, I hope, isn't going on anywhere else. It certainly hasn't happened again at the LA Times. It's night and day under our current ownership. And our editors. We now get all the support we need for pursuing stories like this. So,
yeah,
I hope that will be a one-off experience.
Paul Pringle, Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption. Thank you so much for taking time with us today. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye. It's Paul Pringle, LA Times investigative reporter. The book that he wrote, Bad City, Peril and Power in the City of Angels, and the podcast version, Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, a 10-part series. I know folks sometimes I'll see on Facebook say, anybody got a good podcast I should check out? And I've not listened to all 10 of these, but the first couple were very interesting. And I find that whole investigative reporter thing to be such a mixed, I am, as I mentioned to Paul there, I'm not the kind of person likes to confront. I don't like to push unless I really have to. And just to, the mix of using certain skills at certain times, being, going for when there's no hope, or trying to persevere when no one's responding to your calls, your emails, or you're getting stonewalled over here. It's a challenge, I'm sure. But to make sure you're still being legal about everything you do and all that. So anyhow, glad to have a chance to talk with Paul, especially because he's a Pulitzer Prize winner and has a number of times and has learned a lot. Some of the times we have our guests on the program, by the way, they are calling a number of radio stations and we only get them for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes at the most. And my mind's always racing with more questions I could ask, but glad to have had Paul on for now, and maybe we'll get a chance to have him on again down the road. Another Paul that we have had on the program several times, Pastor Paul Shepherd, the program Destined for Victory. You may catch that weekday afternoons at 2:30, the WFIL's Ministry of the Month in April. And you can also catch a show at night at 9:30 and on Saturday afternoons at 2. Just a quick reminder, if you want, the rest of this month, throughout April, you can get a free MP3. It's called Let My People Smile. It's a preview of a collection of humorous preaching clips from Pastor Paul Shepherd. When you get your free download, you're automatically entered for a daily prize that we make winners of, a Destined for Victory journal and pen. And in fact, let me do a couple of congratulations. We have Lee in King of Prussia, Charlotte in Levittown, Mike in Warminster, Merrill in Huntington Valley. In Philadelphia, we have Vincent, Nora, Bernita, Robert is in Phoenixville. Karen is in Philadelphia, as is Kathy. And then we have Rose in Beverly, New Jersey, Constance in Garnet Valley. And who else do we have here? Linda and Glenn Mills. I think those are folks who have won so far. We'd love to put your name on that list. So first, get your free download of that Let My People Smile preview. And then you enter for the daily prize of that Destined for Victory journal and pen. It's real nice where it zips up, and when the paper runs out, you can replace it. Just got to make sure it's the right size. And on top of that, there's a grand prize, which includes that daily prize and a $100 Amazon.com gift card. It's WFIL's Ministry of the Month for April, Destined for Victory with Pastor Paul Shepherd. Catch that weekdays at 2:30 p.m., 9:30 p.m., also Saturdays at 2 p.m. We have another special guest coming up in just a little bit here. His name is Zorro, Z-O-R-O, and he has played drums with the likes of Lenny Kravitz and Earth, Wind & Fire and the Four Seasons, a wide variety of artists over the years. He has a memoir out to honor his mom. We're going to talk about, of course, Mother's Day is not far off. Maybe it would be a timely thing, but we're looking forward to having him join the program, give you a little sample of his music as well. That's coming up next on the Tim DeMoss Show, AM 560, WFIL.com, and on the WFIL app.
Have a guest you'd like to hear on the Tim DeMoss Show on AM 560 WFIL? Email timmyd@wfil.com.
It's 4:31 on the Tim DeMoss Show on WFIL. Before the break, I was just mentioning about WFIL's Ministry of the Month being Destined for Victory with Pastor Paul Shepherd, and how he has been on the program a few times. I just want to give you a clip of one of the times that he joined our program. Pastor Paul has local roots, Philly guy, but also has preached in other parts of the country and has been on the West Coast for many years. And one of the conversations we had, talked with him about the notion of, you know, what it's like to preach in one part of the country versus another part of the country, and you know, how different it may or may not be depending on where you are.
It made me think back to how the apostles, how they really maximized their gifting. Paul, for instance, when he would travel to evangelize different cities and regions, when we look at, when we kind of study what he did in the book of Acts, it's quite a learning curve from one place to another. For instance, when he ministered in Berea and in Thessalonica, the ministries were always based at the synagogue, and he preached the gospel from that basis. But when he goes to places like Corinth, or in Acts 17, when he goes to Athens, he is among people who are not that married to or even familiar with the Judeo ethic, and therefore he can't come at them from a Moses perspective because they don't necessarily know or respect Moses. And so what Paul teaches us in 1 Corinthians 9 is, there's a verse that says, I become all things to all men, that by all means I may win some. And I found in my travels, ministering in Philly, ministering in Cali, ministering in Detroit for a short period of time, you really do have to get to know what the needs, the hurts, the interests, the values of the people are in each area. And then that's how you take the gospel and make it live among them. The gospel has power built in, but sometimes we don't package it correctly. So if Paul had gone to Athens talking only about Moses, he would have missed his opportunity. But when you look at him in Acts 17, he goes to the Areopagus, where the Greek philosophers speak, and he pays a compliment. He said, I walked around town, and I see that you all are very religious, so much so that you have an altar to an unknown God. He said, I came to town to tell you who that God is. So he immediately had their attention, and then he preached Jesus, and some folks were saved.
That's Pastor Paul Shepherd, one of the several conversations we've had the privilege of having with him over the years. You're always welcome to sort through the podcast at WFIL.com. They're done chronologically, and you can just kind of scroll back and look for those. So that said, I mentioned our next guest, Zorro, Z-O-R-O. You may know him, you may not, but you probably know him one way or another if you like certain bands and artists like Bobby Brown, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, New Edition, Jody Watley, Philip Bailey of Earth, Wind & Fire, Lisa Marie Presley. He's performed with all these, and he is known as the Minister of Groove. He has been voted the number one R&B drummer and clinician by premier industry music publications like Modern Drummer. And so let me give you a sample of just of his music as he performed with Lenny Kravitz on Ryan Seacrest. And this is Ryan Seacrest introducing this little clip.
Give it up for Lenny Kravitz!
And Zorro's on the drums here. So our guest, Zorro, playing on that song with Lenny Kravitz on Ryan Seacrest, on air with Ryan Seacrest, that segment. And he has a book out now as well, Zorro does, simply called Maria's Scarf, in the subtitle, A Memoir of a Mother's Love, a Son's Perseverance, and Dreaming Big. Very glad to bring on Zorro to the program. How you doing?
Tim, I'm great. How are you doing in Philadelphia?
Excellent. Thanks for taking time to chat. Congratulations on Maria's Scarf.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be on your show and excited to talk with you.
Well, we would love to throw the ball to you for a second just to share some backstory. I'd love to hear how things come together. Has this been in the works for you for a long time? And just share about how you went about putting it together.
Yeah, well, Maria's Scarf has been in my heart all of my life, really. So Maria, for the listener, Maria was my mother. And there's a story about the scarf, of how she tied her scarf around my neck when I was a little boy and told me that I would do something phantasmal with my life. So I grew up with this incredible mother with this irrepressible love, and we grew up with seven siblings, no father, lived in a car at one point. This is the full-on American overcoming story, the underdog story, Rudy, Rocky, the Blind Side meets Forrest Gump. So I've been able to live this incredible life, but no one would know all the things that I had to overcome to get there. So it had always been in my heart to write this story about our family, about my mother's love, about this kid with a dream. And I actually started a diary at the age of 10. and I kept writing in it into my 20s. So I've been documenting my life, really my whole life, without knowing that I'm going to be doing a book.
Yeah.
But I've been working on it for the past 15 years, really hard in the past 15 years, and I read over 300 books during that time to study the craft of memoir, because I really wanted to tell this story in a beautiful way with the goal of inspiring and impacting people around the world with this overcoming story. So that's what drove me past the doubt, through all the hard work, was this is a great story that's going to inspire people, but I want to write it in a beautiful way. So it's been in the works for a long time, and it was also rejected over 100 times in the last 15 years. I started pitching it 15 years ago, but I'm so glad that it was, because it took all those years to really learn how to write it the right way, and now it is just a beautiful, epic story, and it's coming out with a major publisher, Blackstone, next week. So good things take time.
Wow. Well, it mirrors, really, the story of your life in a lot of ways, like getting the book together, right, and getting it out and persevering. Share a minute about your mom, if you would, and just having seven children and all the circumstances, moving several dozen times when you were not even 10 years old when you started journaling. What do you remember most about your mom and her love for you guys?
That she was the most soulful person I ever knew. She lived with God. And she was a mighty encourager and just a super strong woman. And if she were alive today, man, I would tell her so many more things. I had always told her all my life how much I loved her and how special she was, and how even after I began making it as a musician, I would always tell her, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this without you. So it's not like I didn't get to say those things, but she's been gone for 20 years, and now I'm 61. And now my respect meter has gone up over the top for her, because I have two children. I've been married for 29 years. I have a wonderful wife and two great kids. And I find being a parent has been very difficult. And this is in the best of circumstances. A guy who's had good jobs and made it in life, and my kids haven't struggled like I did. And I go, how the heck did she not give up with seven children, no dads ever to help, one obstacle after another? Man, she's a rock. She's my hero. And there are many moms like that, and many fathers like that, and many grandparents like that, but they never get any notoriety. Nobody writes about them, because all people care about are celebrities. And I go, you know what? The true heroes in this world are the unsung heroes, the mothers and the fathers that do all the heavy lifting, all the emotional healing, all the support, all the help their kids through all the hard knocks. So I wanted to write something that really honored her. But I'll tell you one quick story.
Yeah.
There was a time when we lived in rural Oregon, and my mother was Mexican. And at that time, they didn't appreciate somebody with darker skin, and they hated us. And we never did anything to anybody, but they just decided to hate us. And so they shot and killed our dog, the neighbors. And my mother was distraught. We were all distraught. And we didn't have the money, but she, 6 months later, she heard an ad on the radio that there was a woman selling Norwegian elk hound puppies for $50. Well, I didn't know this until we got there, but she took us out in the middle of nowhere, this place called Wolf Creek, and she went there, and we didn't know why we were there, and she was there to help us get a new dog. But she didn't have the $50. I didn't know that. So at the end of negotiating with the lady, she told the lady, she said, is there any way you would take $25? My mother belonged to the Double Day Book Club, you know, where you get like 11 books for a penny,
right,
you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I have all these cookbooks, and they're worth more than that. And the lady says, well, you don't have the other $25. So she goes, no, I don't even have enough gas to get home. But my kid's dog was killed, and I promised them I'd get him a new dog. So she went up there with faith. She did not have the money, and she didn't know whether we'd walk away with a dog or not. But the lady was so moved by her that she goes, you know what, Maria, I have never seen such courage from a woman. I'm going to give you the dog for $20, keep the other $5 for gas. And I just never forgot, like, just what it, my mother doing that, like the faith that it took to drive out there, because she could have left disappointed. The woman could have not given us the dog.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of woman she was, you know. And so, and she scraped every penny together to take me to see Frank Sinatra when I was 12 years old. And it was a life-changing concert, because when I saw Sinatra, who she loved, and because she loved him, I loved him. And she played all those records. So she always did the best she could to teach me to dream and to teach me to have vision. And she would read books to me from the library about dreaming and about visions that we would check out. So this was the kind of person she was. And so many mothers are that way, and so many fathers are that way, but they never get honored And I thought, you know, who needs another gossipy rock and roll tell-all book about sex, drugs, and rock and roll? How about a beautiful story of a mother's love that made it possible for a kid to live a dream? How about a universal story of a family's unbreakable bond and a kid who, and you nailed it in the first part of the interview when you said how the book mirrored my life in the sense that my whole story is this overcoming story, and yet the story of the overcoming story come to life is a continuation of that overcoming theme, because no one will know when the book is out. They'll think, oh, he got the book deal because he's Zorro, because he's a famous drummer, and he's played with all these people. They don't know that I faced 100 rejections in all those years, and yet it's this continuous theme in my life, but I am a living example that you can reach for the stars and you can get there if you're just willing to work hard, if you've got the talent for that thing, and if you just persevere and refuse to give up.
That's great. I love it. The last question for you, Zorro, too, because I understand you're a believer, how your faith came into play. Was it during those years or later in life?
My faith has been in play from the beginning of my life.
Wow.
Because my mother was a woman of faith. When I was 5 years old, I don't even have a recollection of it. But my older sister, who's 10 years older than me, she would say to me, she goes, I used to ask you when you were a little kid where you've been. And she said, you would say, I've been talking to Jesus. Now, I don't even have a recollection of it. But she said, you always said, so I don't know, God's hand was always on my life in some way that I couldn't know. And when I was 12 years old, I went to one of those Baptist summer church camps where, you know, I walked up to the altar and I gave my life to God. And I prayed and asked them to forgive me for all my sins. But then I also said, if you can help me to fulfill my dream, I would love that. You know, and I prayed that simple prayer. And God has been in my life all of my life. And even through all the ups and downs, and there's never been a part of my life where faith wasn't involved in it. But it was very simple faith, simple childlike faith. And I'm still that way to this day. When I wrote the book, I'm still the same kid on the cover of the book. I'm 7 years old on that book wearing his mother's scarf, and I still dream big dreams. But I do the work, but then I just believe God's going to do something magical to make it happen, and it always happens. And it's weird because it's a combination of my work. You know, the Bible says the Holy Spirit is the helper, not the doer. We are the doer. We are to put our hand to the plow and work. And I've done that my whole life. And then God does the other part,
yeah,
the favor of giving me a career or a book deal. But I try to use all this to help people to walk faith and to trust God and to live a life of impact and to understand the reason for it all. God gave me this great platform, but my whole purpose is to serve it, serve other people and inspire them to live their dream. And so I'm very purposeful and dedicated to the intention of how I live.
Love it. I love it. Zorro, thank you so much for taking time. Congratulations on Maria's Scarf, a memoir of a mother's love, a son's perseverance, and dreaming big. Hope we get a chance to connect again down the road.
Thank you so much for the interview, and you were awesome. I appreciate it. I'm so grateful.
Me too. God bless you. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. God bless you.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Zorro. If you're just tuning in, Z-O-R-O, a world-famous drummer who has played with the likes of Lenny Kravitz, Bobby Brown, Frankie Valli, and the Four Seasons, many others. But our main focus on our conversation, talking about this new book that he has, Maria's Scarf. It's about his mom. It's called A Memoir of a Mother's Love, a Son's Perseverance, and Dreaming Big. Let me read you just a little blurb of what this book is about in case you're interested in picking up a copy. Let's see. It says, as the father, and he shared a bit about this in our conversation, but this gives you a little more context. As the fatherless biracial child of a Mexican immigrant, Danny Donnelly, which is Zorro's real name, was never expected to amount to much. Before the age of 9, his single mother had moved her 7 children more than 30 times from the impoverished streets of South Central Los Angeles to rural Oregon and everywhere in between. Sometimes there was no home to go to, so they slept in their 62 Chevy. Sometimes dinner was a slice of bread. Sometimes they showered in a nearby park. Desperate yet ever hopeful, they clung to the only thing they had, each other. Through it all, Danny longed for his father's love and approval, ultimately channeling his pain and transforming himself into Zorro, one of the world's greatest drummers. Eloquent, hilarious, and remarkably tender, Maria's Scarf, a memoir of a mother's love, a son's perseverance, and dreaming big, tells the story of a family fighting for survival against almost insurmountable odds. So there you have it. We'll put the title in the podcast of the program in case you didn't write all that down. I'm sure that that's the case. Really glad to have Zora on the program. Let me give you just a quick sample. I would have loved to have had him longer, but again, as I mentioned earlier, sometimes we have guests who are on what's known as radio tours, and we get a slot, but it's a, you know, something like 8 or 9 minutes, sometimes less, sometimes a little more. And so, I have extra questions written down. I love talking with people. I would have loved to talk to him about his craft as a drummer, to be that versatile and sought after by lots of different styles and lots of artists is something. And then I was just Googling around looking at some of the stuff that he did. This is just a short clip out of a 7-plus-minute clip. This is just about a minute of it that gives you a sample of his drumming work. And it's actually... It goes up and down. We have a drum set in our living room. Nothing fancy, but we have the basics. And I can keep a beat and have some fun. My kids will play guitar or piano. So it's a fun musical experience, just the basics. But you listen to someone like this who can do all kinds of things, slow it down, pick it up, really rapid, really slow. This is an example of Zorro, his drumming. And just give you a little taste of it right now. Zorro from the Modern Drummer Festival, showing a bit of what he can do with his God-given abilities. And again, if you're looking for a copy of the book or want to look more up on him, you spell his name Z-O-R-O, Zorro, one word, real name Danny Donnelly. And the name of the book, again, Maria Scarf, A Memoir of a Mother's Love, A Son's Perseverance, and Dreaming Big. Quick break. Come back with more. You're listening to The Tim DeMoss Show, AM 560, WFIL.com, and on the WFIL app. Thanks for hanging out today.
Thanks for tuning in to The Tim DeMoss Show podcast with AM 560, WFIL, and WFIL.com.
It's just about 4:54 on the Tim DeMoss Show on WFIL. Had a full program already. Don't want to forget that it is Election Day today in Pennsylvania. The primary on the ballot, candidates for president, U.S. House and Senate, Attorney General, Auditor General, and Treasurer, also State House and Senate, and across the state, depending where you live, there might also be ballot questions. Had a neat experience this morning with my daughter Theodora on the way to school. Our polling place was nearby. I thought, do I stop now? Do I go home afterwards? And I thought, let me stop in now real quick. Turns out I was the second person there. The parking lot was empty. I was like, okay, let me just jump in here and do this. And she was able to walk with me and just see the process. And it was kind of neat to be able to explain. And it's funny because I don't think about this stuff that often. And then when it's election day, you're getting close, you're like, oh, you start thinking about a lot more. And then as I tend to do, my mind races in all kinds of directions. I like asking questions and I think about things. One of the things I said to my daughter, for example, is, because we're obviously the general election is in November. So I was explaining to her about, to the best of my knowledge, I hope I taught her the right things, that right now, I said that, like, if you're a Republican, you vote Republican. If you're a Democrat, you vote Democrat. Like, you have to, whatever you're registered at, you need to vote that way now. This is the election to decide who gets to run for office in November officially, have that election. So I said, for now, you kind of have to, as they say, stay in your lane. If you're registered Democrat, you have to vote Democrat today. If you're registered Republican, you have to vote Republican today. I said, but then in the general election, I believe you can vote whatever you're registered as. It doesn't matter. If you are a Democrat, you can vote some each way or whatever it is. If for some reason there's a candidate you don't want, you can vote across the way. And sometimes that'll happen. I know for me, pro-life is a big thing for me personally, and that's not the only thing, but it's a thing for sure. And so sometimes I will do some research on candidates on that topic, and then I try to expand beyond just that topic. But anyhow, so we had to talk about that. We talked about a little bit about voter ID at our location. It was interesting that I said, Theodore, you know, you don't have to have ID here. You just have to be able to sign. They have a book. They open the book up and your signature has to match the one that's on file. So I did a little research on that. In Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is one of a number of states. I guess the rule is you don't have to have ID. However, if you are a first time voter, you need to have ID, and whether that's photo or not. In New Jersey, you don't have to have ID, but if you didn't give it when you registered to be a voter, then you do have to bring it. And in Delaware, all Delaware voters asked to provide identification, but does not have to be photo. And so if you have any questions about that, you know, I'm sure you can look that up. The polls are open till 8 o'clock tonight. But I find there are people who believe you should have to absolutely show ID. It's crazy. You don't have to do that. Other people say you should not have to do it. They have their reasons too. Without getting into that now, I have always marveled, or at least scratched my head, some of each, the whole voting process, because there's so many variables, not just the, you know, human error. There's also just accountability, and there's things like rules change from state to state. For example, in Pennsylvania, if you're an independent, you can't vote this primary. We have what they call a closed primary system. So only registered Democrats and registered Republicans can vote today. Same in Delaware and New Jersey. Interestingly enough, of the 9 states that are closed, Pennsylvania, Jersey, and Delaware are closed. Then there's Florida, Kentucky, Nevada, and some others that are New York also closed. So anyhow, how the things change from place to place. But I say that just in closing at the end here, one thing that encourages me is scripture, where, you know, the Lord's in charge of all of this stuff. So it's good for, Lord willing, the systems to be proper, the machines to work, the accountability to work, people to be honest, all of those things, yes, for sure. And hopefully those things, you know, are happening as much as possible, and or you can work towards that if you want to take up that mantle. But also, it's encouraging to remember that God is in charge of all of these things. And among other things, we are supposed to and should, I should say, pray, you know, right? Pray for our leaders. So we did that on the way to school this morning. Pray for President Biden, Vice President Harris, for the governors in our country, for the judges, and for the Lord to be at work, even if a leader or a judge or whoever, congressman, senator, whatever, is not a believer. I'm sure that's the case, right? In many cases, but not all, that the Lord would be at work. I think of Proverbs 21, verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He directs it like a water course wherever he pleases. So as we are in an election year, especially, you know, with presidential and otherwise, be encouraged, and let's encourage each other to remember really who's in charge. As much as we participate and have the privilege of participating in the electing process, Proverbs 21:1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He directs it like a water course wherever he pleases. And the Lord is on his throne in all these things. So let's love each other. Let's vote. Let's do what we can to support the process. And remember again, and talk to the Lord on behalf of our leaders and pray. All right, that's it. Alistair Begg, Truth for Life next. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Tim DeMoss Show podcast. Feel free to tune in to the full show each weekday afternoon from 4 till 5 on AM 560 WFIL and at WFIL.com.